We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm here with Jason Pat. Jason, oh no, the Bulls are bad again.
Oh no, the tank is tank back on, possibly? I don't know. We got Zach LaVine's dealing with a knee injury. Lauri Markkanen can't make a damn shot. And the Bulls have lost, three straight and I think 5 of 6 now. The one win was after our last pod when that crazy win over the Sixers. But basically, since then, it's been kind of back downhill.
Yeah, the last pod was fun because we got to talk about that wild 4-0 team win over Atlanta. We got to talk about a really fun win against the Sixers. Since then, Bulls have played the Pistons in back-to-back games, dropping both of them. In the first one, they lose 112-104. That was back on last Friday. They played them again this past Sunday. They gave up 131 to the Pistons. Blake Griffin just threw the Bulls in both of those games. And then last night, the Bulls again losing to the spiraling Los Angeles Lakers, 123-107. LeBron, in typical LeBron fashion, just absolutely smokes the Bulls. LeBron has been mailing it in ever since the All-Star break, comes out and drops 36-10 on the Bulls with multiple highlight reel dunks, including one from Kyle Kuzma that was a reverse alley-oop off like a three-quarters court bounce pass.
Bounce pass, yeah.
Totally crazy. If you've been on the internet at all, you've probably seen it. He also had one late in the game where the Lakers are only up like 11 with 4 minutes left. LeBron's running a 2-on-0 break with Josh Hart. Josh Hart has the ball in his hands, throws it off the backboard, and LeBron reverse dunks it. So that was just classic LeBron against the Bulls. There was a stat going around that he's had 18 30-point games as a visitor at the United Center. Allen Iverson is the next most with 8. So LeBron has just made a career out of murdering the Bulls, and it's good to see it. Good to see that he can still do it at age 34, even when he really has nothing else to play for.
Yeah, although I guess the Bulls have beaten him in the regular season a lot, but obviously he has made a habit of eliminating the Bulls from the playoffs. And officially, not that the Bulls were ever in playoff contention, but officially, womp womp, the Bulls are out of playoff contention, 19-50. That game yesterday was really strange because the Bulls went up, like LeBron coasted through the first quarter. Rondo played the first 12 minutes, was a minus 18. Like I was clowning the Lakers. I was so ready to just, like I said, basically clown them the entire game, just make fun of Rondo and shit all over him. I know you love Rondo, but I hated Rondo in his one season here. But yeah, and then like the Bulls went up 20 points, and then LeBron was like, all right, enough of this nonsense. And then he just started to dominate. And like you said, he had those highlight reel dunks, and it was it was showtime Lakers in that fourth quarter with the lob off the backboard from Josh Hart to finish the Bulls off. So yeah, the Bulls back to looking like kind of hot trash. The Pistons game was bad, where they gave up like 130 points. The Pistons were raining threes on them, and that happened again in the Lakers game last night. After the Lakers scored 16 points in the first quarter, it looked like they were going to get their ass beat and roll over. They scored 82 points over the next two quarters. They had like 39 in the second, 43 in the third quarter. It basically was reminding me of the Warriors games and both the Warriors games this season, when the Warriors just absolutely embarrassed the Bulls. The Lakers in last night's third quarter had 22 fast break points. Sacramento Kings lead the entire league at 21 fast break points per game. So the Lakers had more than that in one quarter. Rondo, after I was making fun of him all first quarter, Rondo was basically running the show, pushing the ball every time. The Bulls transition defense had no idea what they were doing. Like I said, this game was without Zach LaVine. I guess let's talk a bit about Zach LaVine. The last time we saw Zach LaVine on the court was that sick, crazy Sixers game when he won the game single-handedly for the Bulls, just down over and over again, getting buckets, and he got that last game winner on the layup. And then found out that he had a patellar tendon strain, and not the knee that he had surgically repaired at the ACL. This is the other knee. They called him day to day. He didn't play in either Pistons game, then he didn't play last night's game. And I thought maybe that this was heading towards a full season shutdown. We saw that happen at the end of last year when he came back. His surgically repaired knee started aching up on him, and the Bulls ended up with nothing to play for, the tank thing. They decided to shut him down. I thought maybe that's what was going to happen now again, but now it looks like he just went through a full practice, and Boylan said that he's hoping that LaVine can play Friday against the Clippers. Do you think it's smart to bring him back now? Do you think the Bulls should just shut him down, or do you think they it's fine to just bring him back and try to keep this momentum going that he's been playing with?
No, shut him down for sure. There's only 13 games left in the season, and the upside to the Bulls dropping three straight at this point. After the Hawks win tonight, the Bulls now have a five-game cushion between them and Atlanta. So the Bulls are going to finish fourth at worst. Cleveland has also picked up some wins over the last week. Cleveland is only two games in front of the Bulls, or a game and a half.
I think it's a game and a half,
A game and a half in front of the Bulls right now. So if the Bulls can get to that three spot, suddenly they're back up to a 14% chance, which is the best percent chance you can have in this lottery with the new rules. So if the Bulls come in fourth, it's 12.5%. We'll take our chances with 12.5%. I think that, you know, that's realistically as good as you could have hoped for in terms of the lottery chances, given how well they've played at times in February and during, you know, the post All-Star break portion of the season. So, but no, I think LaVine should totally be shut down. You did steal one of the points I was going to make, which is that this is an injury on his other knee, not the knee that LaVine tore the ACL on. This is in his right knee. He tore the ACL on his left knee. But regardless, at this point, the Bulls have nothing left to really prove this season. I do think that they did show some serious signs of progress with their hot February. LaVine was a huge part of that. LaVine, if he doesn't play another game, is going to end up having a career year averaging 23.8 points per game, 4.5 assists, 4.6 rebounds per game. His numbers across the board are mostly improved. If you look at, his usage rate, his assist percentage,
efficiency is good,
true shooting percentage. So we covered that in the last podcast. The dude has definitely made major strides this year. At this point, I mean, I remember debating people. I said this when LaVine signed the contract. I was like, well, you know, Devin Booker got $150 million and LaVine got $80 million. So, I think those two guys are pretty similar. So maybe LaVine isn't overpaid that badly. There's no doubt you would rather have LaVine on this contract than Devin Booker on the max, right?
Yeah, I was on CLTV Sports Feed earlier today, and I actually mentioned Devin Booker's name. It's like, $19 million at this point, especially with the cap, is going to be rising. It's rising this summer, and then it's taking, I'm pretty sure, another big jump in 2020. And at that point, like, $19 million is decent starter money, basically. Like, you think, like, Devin Booker is going to be a guy making 30 some million in a few years. Like, that's a lot. And like, Booker, he's a good player, obviously, but like, he's similar to LaVine in that you wonder if like, is he getting empty points? Like, is his defense actually good? So like, when LaVine is making basically maybe like a little more than like half, like two thirds of what Booker's making, I'm cool with that. Like, I think the contract is definitely, as long as he stays healthy, even if he doesn't ever like really improve his defense that much, I think his offense by itself is probably valuable enough to make that contract worth
it. Yeah, and I also think he's movable if they want to move him, depending on what they do with the draft.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to talk draft a little bit later. I got some things to say about a guy who's going to pique Bulls fans' interest. But Zach LaVine, you know, he doesn't need to play another game. There's 13 games left. The dude's had a pretty good year, I would say. Like, if we were going to grade him, we'll probably do this on a future podcast, but I'd probably give him a B. Or a B plus,
yeah. At least, especially like after the after the injury, like, he was brutal coming off the injury, and obviously you don't want to judge a guy too much coming off that ACL injury, but like, he was really bad. Like, his shot selection was horrible. His efficiency was awful. Decision making was awful. Like you could tell, like he was really rusty, and it really never got better. And then he ended the year with a sore knee. So when he signed the contract, you were wondering, like, is he really going to come back from this, like, and be really good? And I feel like he's pretty much past. I wouldn't say with flying colors. Like I said, he's still flawed. His defense still sucks. The decision making still has its questionable times. But he's even improved with like the turnover rate. It's gone down a little bit as well, and his assists have gone up. So like. He's definitely made strides over the course of the year, especially when the team has gotten healthier and they've started playing this style that's more conducive to like to, I feel like him having success. So yeah, I mean, I feel like it's been a positive year for Levine. And one other point I feel like making with him, like not that I've talked about before that I'm not a big fan of Chris Dunn. I really think he should be basically done with the Bulls. But I feel like if you sit Levine, that also gives Dunn at least more time to either. Raise his trade value, prove even something. Because we saw Dunn played one of his better games against the Lakers yesterday. He still had a couple dumbass fouls, some dumbass turnovers, but he was actually pretty aggressive even right from the start. I think he had 18 points. Like he flirted with a triple-double. He had 9 assists, 7 rebounds. And he shot 8 of 16 from the field, hit a couple of three-pointers, and he took some threes. Like he was aggressive with his three-point shooting. He was stepping into when they're giving him threes, stepping into threes and taking without hesitation. So I feel like even without Levine there, that could also maybe help Chris Dunn maybe find something, whatever the hell that something is. Because the other game without Levine, he really the second Pistons game. I think Levine actually played that first Pistons game. The second Pistons game when Chris Dunn did basically nothing and the Bulls got blown out. It was really disappointing. So that's why it was nice to see him kind of break out a little bit in that Lakers game. And that's why I feel like it'd be nice to see him just kind of do a little more with Levine out. But like I said, it seems like they're going to bring Levine back, if not Friday, maybe sometime on this West Coast road trip. But I don't know. I guess we'll see. I think I'm kind of with you that I'd be fine just sitting him the rest of the year.
They got to sit him. This is not even a debate, dude. Like, Boylan, if you have half a brain, sit this guy. Boylan's been overplaying a lot of these guys, too, after the All-Star break. Now, they have picked up some wins because of it. But at this point, just chill, Boylan. Like, your job is safe. You're not trying to prove anything. I know you're trying to instill good habits in the guys, but the best way to instill good habits in them, I think, you know, for the depth on the roster is to sit Levine and let some of the other guys pick up a bigger workload. You mentioned Chris Dunn. It's kind of pathetic that one of Chris Dunn's best games this year, he takes 16 shots and scores 18 points. Well, that's because
still can't get
free throws. In that game, Dunn has not had a free throw in like five. He has 3 free throws the entire month, which is just crazy.
I mean, that's pretty typical.
But I will say for Chris Dunn, he now has 6 straight games with 2 steals. So there's definitely value in that. But, you know, we've talked about moving Dunn quite a bit on this podcast. I'm all in favor of it. I think the Bulls need a new point guard next season, maybe 2 new point guards. And I have a friend who's constantly throwing fake trade ideas at me. He actually came up with what I thought was a somewhat decent one for the first time in his life. My buddy Lance, who's known for his bad sports takes, he actually had a decent trade idea the other day. He put out there Chris Dunn for Frank Kaminsky. Now, Kaminsky is 1 year older than Dunn, so that would mean that he would need to play on the qualifying offer, I guess, for next season. I don't even know if there's no trade protection. If you are playing on the qualifying offer, who knows, maybe.
I think you can veto possibly if you're playing on the qualifying offer. I think you
can. Well, bring him home. Bring Frank Kaminsky home, a proud graduate of Bennett High School on the southwest side of Chicago. You know, not that I think Kaminsky's great or anything, but his advanced stats or his numbers by the minute have at least been pretty decent. He still shot 39% from 3-point range this year, only played 12 minutes a game, but shot 50% from the floor.
He only actually been playing really well lately.
7 points a game, but I would do Chris Dunn for Frank Kaminsky, I think.
That's kind of fun. I guess I would take almost any useful player. I mean, because the Bulls do need, they need some type of, they'll need front court depth, but Big Chris is basically useless at this point. But I'm looking at Frank was basically like getting no minutes, and he requested a trade/buyout, and then he wasn't able to do anything with that. But now they've been playing him all of a sudden over in the start of March, and he's actually been playing really well. He's averaging 15 a game in March, 51% from the field, 46% on threes. Sure, why not? Like, I guess you could do worse. Like, I really don't know, because I don't know what else you're really getting for Chris Dunn at this point. Like, he either just turned 25 or he's going to be 25 and like, a week. He's coming up on the last year of his rookie deal. Like, I feel like his trade value is probably almost shot at this point. So
yeah, what I would want from him is another guy who is kind of a draft bust. Yeah. You know, if you look at the same draft class, I can't imagine the Suns have any use for Dragan Bender. I believe Bender was the fourth pick.
Oh, no, he's been a huge bust. Yeah,
and Dunn was the fifth pick. Huge. Like, I would even do that if I was the Bulls, even though Dunn is a better player than Bender. I mean, maybe not. I'm looking at Bender's numbers right now.
Bender's awful. Really he's bad. Terrible.
But you know, that's the kind of move you want to make. I think, like, the Knicks, look at the Knicks roster right now, man. They got all these guys who were basically busted lottery picks. They're trying to rehab. They have Hezonja. They have Noah Vonleh, who was on the Bulls briefly last year. They have Emmanuel Mudiay. They got a bunch of dudes like that. So
I don't know how much they like Neil Aquina. Like, I mean, I guess he'd be like kind of done in that he like can't really shoot and he's more like a defense first guy. Like, I don't know if there's really any value of like flipping those. I don't really know, but yeah, like, the Knicks are just kind of a mess of young guys right now, but James Dolan's confident they're getting big free agents, so we'll see about that.
Yeah, but that's basically my point with Chris Dunn. Like, I think it's time to move on. Even if, let's say in a scenario where you're drafting a point guard for next year, but you still want a veteran, I would just sign a veteran free agent over bringing back Chris Dunn, because at that point, he's probably not going to be in your long-term plans. He was literally the fifth pick in the damn draft, so I don't imagine that he's going to be willing to just settle into a career backup role. I think it might be best for Chris Dunn to move on to a third NBA team and get a fresh start so early in his NBA career.
Yeah, I would see that as well. Because if you draft a guy, like, you want to upgrade a point guard, but I'm guessing they might not want to start the rookie point guard right away, because if the Bulls are trying to make a jump, they might not want to do that. But then are you really going to start Chris Dunn? Like, it definitely would seem like if they draft a guy, I feel like getting the stop gap veteran would probably be the way they want to go, because if they want to take a next step and possibly be a playoff team, make sure, like, that just seems like they'd want to go. So if you can get something for Chris Dunn, go for it. So that's why, like, that's why I kind of want to see him maybe do something down the stretch here. If even if it just maybe helps his trade value at all, that's why I kind of, if Levine's out of the picture, it gives Dunn a little more room to maneuver. And maybe if he can put up some big stats, maybe fool a team into giving up something good for the Bulls, like, I would take it. I'd be down for that.
Sure. Other thing we should probably talk about, Lauri Markkanen, after a great February in which he averaged 26-12 a game over that month, he's been slumping pretty hard in March. One great game against the Hawks, which was the 4-0 game. If you remember, he played that game sick. They were saying it during the broadcast, and he even looked like it on the bench. He looked totally exhausted in that game.
I think he had to be pulled at one point because he was gassed, and I think he came back in, but he was in the overtimes, he did almost nothing. Like I said, I'm pretty sure he got pulled at one point because he was gassed. He said he was sick. I think he was dealing with the flu or something else, and basically since that game,
that game sort of set, you know, the tone a little bit, maybe given the illness for the rest of his month, but since then hasn't been great. He's 31-90 from the field, which is shooting 34% from the field. He's 9-40 from 3-point range, which is 22.5%. You know, there's always talk of the rookie wall, but you can hit a wall as a sophomore too, especially for a player who hasn't had a ton of reps in his career, like Markkanen, missing, you know, a lot of the early season portion of the schedule. Are you worried about Markkanen? Do we overreact to his February? Where are you at right now?
I think it's a situation, just a natural fluctuation of play from young player. Like the 25-12 in February, like, that got people excited, that got us excited. That wasn't realistic to expect him to all of a sudden be a 25-12 guy from like here on out. Like, it just wasn't going to happen. He went through a hot stretch. He was showing a lot of new things, but then defenses adjust. He was going to go through a slump just naturally. So, like, I feel like teams are being pretty a bit physical with him. They're really getting up into him, taking away some of the stuff that he was showing before. And he's just missing shots. Like, it happens. Like, guys miss shots. Like, we saw him in the Lakers game. He was 0 of 8 from 3, 4 of 17 overall. And he was just missing open shots. And, like, sometimes it just happens. Like, again, like, there's reasons to be excited about Lauri Markkanen, even with this slump. Like, we've seen the skill set he can have. We saw what he did in February. We saw what he did as a rookie. Like, He's obviously a really talented, really skilled player. He's still, whatever, 20, 21 years old. Like, it's very rare for a guy to come into the league right away and just be straight up dominant. Like, there are some guys that have done that, but even those guys will have slumps here and there. Like, I wouldn't surprise me. I feel like if he's like, he's just get, like, after that huge game, hitting a bit of a wall, he's a little gassed, a little tired after the huge usage in February when he's putting up 25 points a game and he's using all these possessions and he's pushing the ball, he's pushing pace. Like, I feel like he probably just needs to use the offseason to add more strength, add more lower body strength. Like, we saw him build up his upper body over this past summer. He got a lot bulkier, but he still have to build up that core. He's got to get in better shape overall. I feel like with another offseason of that, he'll come back even stronger next season. I feel like there's basically nothing to worry about. Like, I mean, he's not a perfect player. I think in general, I think we've seen some issues with his defense, and I think that's probably going to be a long-term issue with him. And Jim Boylan was actually talking about some of that after practice today about just kind of his defensive technique. And we saw Lowry last night, some really ugly stretches defensively, getting just blown by off the dribble. Rajon Rondo had one at the end of the game that just kind of was like the perfect capper of Lowry's horrible night. Just drove right past him, and there was like no effort there, and he needs to work on that technique. He needs to work on getting in better shape, maybe get a little quicker. But overall, just like in terms of like his offense and the offensive slump, like, guys go through it. I'm not worried.
No, I'm not worried either. And I can't wait to see Markkanen next year because unless the Bulls hit the lottery and get Zion Williamson, I mean, Markkanen's going to be the focal point of next season. Like, he will hopefully, him and LaVine will be like the two guys who are clearly leading the team in field goal attempts. And, you know, we can talk about this more as next season comes closer. Obviously, we have so much time, but because of the fact that the Bulls played a lot better in February, I think that, you know, it's likely that there's going to be some playoff talk around this team next year, depending on what they do.
I mean, Stacey
King's already been talking about it. Otto Porter,
he already called back, that one.
So, you know, we'll see next year when Markkanen gets back on the court because, he did have an amazing stretch at one point this season. People already started talking about him being an all-star next year, a perennial all-star for his career. His third year next year, that's going to be a show me season. And we have no reason to be anything other than optimistic, but that's what we as Bulls fans have to get excited about right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, when you see the highs, you get so excited. And when you saw this team just playing so well and scoring at a ridiculous rate, like, it's so easy to be like, oh, look at these guys, like, they're all playing great, like, they're definitely gonna be a playoff team next year. Like, I feel like we also you do have to pump the brakes, like, when you have to show that you can sustain it. Like, what, during that great February, we were seeing LaVine and Lowry playing the best basketball of their career. Otto Porter was playing out of his mind. Rolo was playing out of his mind. It's basically everything came together for them for that month, and they were playing the best basketball, like, all these guys of their career. Like, over a long season, we have to see how we can sustain that. We have to see them play better defense. So, like I said, Stacey King called them a playoff team. And during the Pistons game when they got their ass beat, like, the entire game was the Bulls broadcast, like, hyping up the Bulls' future, like, how Lowry and LaVine are going to be all-stars next year, and, like, the Bulls are definitely going to be a playoff team. And it was just like, meanwhile, they were losing they were getting their ass kicked all game. Like we got to chill out. Like, I absolutely could see the Bulls making the playoffs next year. The Eastern Conference, the bottom of the Eastern playoff pictures has been typically pretty shitty in recent years. Like, I could see the Bulls making a jump to possibly around 500 team, but, like, I mean, they still have such a long way to go where they have to prove they can sustain this type of play, and we'll see if they can do it. I mean, I feel like there's some reason for optimism around Lowry, around the team in general, but there's still such a long way to go. I kind of wish we could just fast forward to next season because, like, I kind of lost interest in these March games at this point. We've seen them get their ass beat the last couple games, and it'd be nice to just kind of fast forward with the team hopefully healthy and see how they do next year. But, well, I guess we'll see. We'll have to see what happens in the summer first, and it'll be
one other thing I wanted to mention. Otto Porter Jr. also injured. He had a bruised left knee in the loss to the Lakers, so who knows if we'll be seeing him again for the rest of the year. Man, if you want to go see a Bulls game, if you want to go to the United Center, now is the time to do it on StubHub or something, because these games are going to be like $6 for the rest of the year, probably, like we said.
I think they have a Knicks game. I think they have a Knicks-Bulls-Knicks game coming up at the UC at some point. Like, I'm sure that'll be like $2 on StubHub.
And then next year, at least at the start of the season, there'll probably be some excitement. So we got some more things to talk about, Jason, but we should hit some ad reads really quick. While we're at it, we have a couple messages for you. The first one comes from our sponsor, Harry's. Jason, if you're anything like me, you need a good shave. We have an announcement to make. Blue Wire is teaming up with Harry's to make sure our listeners are shaving comfortably. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a value trial set, which includes a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. You get all three for just $3 shipped right to your door, Jason. Enough with the cheap razors. It's totally worth trying Harry's. Harry's is fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. Harry's founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer by going to Harry's, that's H-A-R-R-Y-S, .com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, Jason, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Again, make sure to go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for $3.
Sounds pretty great. Now, also, we got the NCAA tournament coming up. Great time of year. So with the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, it's the greatest betting event of the year. It's so much fun going to Vegas, doing whatever. Whether you like filling out a bracket, picking a national champ, predicting first round upsets, or all of the above, MyBookie is the perfect home for your March Madness fun. Will Zion Williamson and his teammates cement their legacy at Duke with a title? Can Virginia get past its loss to a 16 seed last year? And can Kentucky get back to the Final Four? If you know the answers, or even if you don't, because who are we kidding? Nobody knows, actually knows the answers. MyBookie is the place to get in on the action. They have something for everyone, even you, multiple bracket guy. MyBookie has been in business for years, and their goal is to give you the best customer service in the business. And the best part is they pay out fast when you win. I'm talking 48 hours. It's pretty fast. Bet with the best, then kick back and enjoy March Madness while you watch your picks cash in. Deposit with MyBookie today with promo code BLUEWIRE for a 50% sign-up bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. With MyBookie, you play, you win, and you get paid.
Hell yeah, man. Getting paid. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, it is.
So I want to talk a little bit of draft here, in particular on one guy who should be of interest to Bulls fans and to NBA fans in general entering the draft. That is Murray State point guard Ja Morant, who punched his ticket to the NCAA tournament this week with a heroic performance in the Ohio Valley Conference tournament. Murray State was not by any stretch a lock to make the NCAA tournament this year. We've seen plenty of mid-major stars through the years miss the big dance, and I thought that was possible, if not likely, for Murray State entering the conference tournament because the OVC was actually really tough. Jacksonville State was a team that went 15-3. Austin Peay went 13-5. Belmont went 16-2. They tied for the regular season crown with Murray State. They have an NBA prospect of their own named Dylan Windler, who the Bulls might be considering with the Grizzlies pick in the second round. But, you know, Morant willed his team to the NCAA tournament with just an unbelievable show. In the semis, he hits a game winner in the closing seconds to beat Jacksonville State, gets an and-one layup with his team down one, pushes them into the final to play Belmont, and then they whoop Belmont's ass. He goes off for 36 points, grabs 11 boards, basically is doing his best Russell Westbrook impression. So now Ja Morant is in the NCAA tournament, and that's great news for the people who haven't really gotten to see him play, which is, well, I think almost everyone.
That's because, like me. That's
everyone.
That is me.
Because, you know, playing in the OVC, you know, the games a lot of times were streamed on ESPN channels, but let's be honest, no one's watching Ohio Valley Conference basketball during the winter. So now the whole country is going to be getting a chance to see Morant up close and personal. He has a chance to be the second pick in this draft behind Zion Williamson. I would say that Zion is the only certainty in this draft. And after that, it's Ja Morant. So, you know, if the Bulls come up with the second or third pick, we've already seen John Paxson, Gar Foreman, pretty much the entire front office there in person scouting Morant. I think Morant is going to be someone they heavily consider and someone they might even take.
Yeah, I've never really seen him play. Like, I can't say I tune into Murray State basketball. I've seen a few highlights. I saw that game winner highlight the other day. I know you've talked about him some before. So I guess we've talked about how the Bulls probably need a new point guard. They probably need to move on. How would Ja Morant fit into what the Bulls like to do? Like, would he be a good fit next to Zach LaVine? What are some of the characteristics he brings to the table? Please just give us your scouting report on Ja Morant, possible Bulls future.
So the reason I think Morant is going to be either the second or third pick in the draft is because he does have a sliver of star potential. It might be a 15% chance, it might be a 10% chance, but there is at least a small opportunity for Ja Morant to become a star in the NBA. And I think it's because of his style of play. This is an all-out attacking point guard. You'll hear Westbrook as a comparison for him. It's not so much that his attributes are similar to Westbrook's, but his playing style is. You look at this year, he put up an astronomical usage rate, 36% usage rate. That's Westbrookian in every sense. He's someone who's going to attack the basket relentlessly, super, super athletic. He'll jump off 2 feet. Lately, he's been working on jumping off one. He's going to fly towards the basket, try to dunk it on your head. So his athleticism and his speed is really the first thing that pops. This is a guy who has the potential to compete in a dunk contest in the NBA. He's that type of athlete at 6'3", 175 pounds. I think that, his superstar equity, we'll call it, comes almost exclusively from his offense. This is a guy who, if you put the ball in his hands, if you surround him with shooting, he can be really dynamic, attacking the defense off the dribble. He has great court vision. People see the dunks so often on SportsCenter, on social media, but what some people might not realize, he actually led college basketball this year in assist rate. He assisted on 51.6% of his team's baskets when he was in the game. Just a really, really impressive passer. He'll remind you a lot of Trae Young with his ability to throw one-handed passes. He's someone who throws a lot of one-handed passes, in part because he plays the game so quickly. He had a quote on that earlier this year where he said he prefers to throw one-handed passes instead of two because he has to slow down too much to throw two-handed passes. So I think that, the scouting report on Morant is that he's the type of point guard where you put it in his hands and you let him go to work. If you surround him with, NBA level shooting and spacing, if you put him in a high pick and roll and let him pick apart the opposing defense, attack the basket, that's where he can be really good. Super skilled passer, super explosive attacking the basket. He's someone who just has a relentless mindset and is going to get into the teeth of the defense and try to get you points. So, if the Bulls were to draft Ja Morant, I think that the bet there would be that maybe this can take their offense to the next stratosphere. This can be a guy who can maybe be a 20-point-per-game scorer in the NBA, but he can also unlock the futures of Lauri Markkanen, of Wendell Carter Jr., of Otto Porter, of Zach LaVine, because he's someone who makes the game easier on everyone else by being such a competitive and high IQ point guard. He has a really great feel for the game. Now, he does have a lot of turnovers. He averaged over 5 turnovers a game, which seems insane. If you follow college basketball, that's a ton for the NBA, and college games are even shorter. But, that's because Murray State wanted him to attack at all costs. And he basically was a one-man show for this team. And he willed him all the way to the NCAA tournament. So his skill did have a pretty big impact on winning games, which is something I would say will be a question moving forward. How does his style impact winning? He's obviously going to be a ball dominant, high usage guy. He has some drawbacks too, and we can talk about those. First of all, he's 170, 175 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah, I was gonna ask.
He's gonna need to add a lot of strength, and you can say that about a lot of guys too. He is young for his class. He was born April 10th, 1999, so he's super young for a sophomore. This is his sophomore season. As a freshman, he also played in the NCAA tournament. Actually, so in both of his years of school, his team won the OVC tournament to make the big dance. They got knocked out by Javon Carter in West Virginia last year in the 5-12 matchup. I assume they're probably going to have a somewhat similar seed this time. They'll probably be anywhere from a 10 to a 12, I would guess. And Morant's going to have the defense locked in on him. So You know, adding strength to his frame, I think, is one of the biggest things. His jumper, I do not really trust. Now, it's worth noting he shot 81% from the foul line. And as a three-point shooter, I mean, RJ Barrett, I don't know if people realize this, entering the ACC tournament, RJ Barrett's a 31% three-point shooter. Morant's at 34%, and he's taken a lot of three-pointers this year off the dribble because, you know, he's had to get his offense going to help his team win. The shot, I don't think, looks great coming out of his hands. It kind of looks like a two-handed push shot. I don't love his fundamentals on it, but given the fact that he is such a good free throw shooter, I think he has potential to be an outside shooter, but mostly this is going to be an attacking point guard who's going to whip passes all around the court to try to set his teammates up. To me, the biggest question mark, though, is defensively, and I just don't know if a Zach LaVine, John Morant pairing defensively is tenable long-term in the NBA. There's tons of videos out there of Morant's defense being really shaky just in terms of his general fundamentals. Now, you know, getting older and learning technique, especially from a defensive guru like Jim Boylan, would certainly help him moving forward. Adding strength would help him. But there's a lot of videos out there on Draft Twitter of him just taking like the wrong angle off a screen or stuff like that. So sort of like not really understanding how to play high caliber defense. And then you have to realize jumping from the OVC to the NBA, man, that is just going to be a huge jump, especially for someone who's so skinny, especially for someone who's young for his age. I think Morant is a safe bet to be a really productive NBA player. I think there's a chance he might not be the type of guy who plays a winning style, but there's a chance he could be for sure too, because offensively he does have a really high IQ game. He is such a great passer, and really there's no comparison for his athleticism. De'Aaron Fox is another guy he often gets comped to in terms of being skinny and super fast. Well, I don't know if he quite has Fox's speed. Fox might be the fastest player in the NBA. Fox also a much better on-ball defender than Morant is. So, to me, this really goes back to a question about just philosophy. What type of point guard do you want next to Zach LaVine long term? Me, I would like an oversized point guard who could defend multiple positions, who could, you know, that would allow you to stick LaVine on the weaker of the two backcourt guys to sort of fortify as much as you can the Bulls defense. Morant is not going to be a good defensive point guard. So that, especially early in his career, I mean, maybe as he gets to be 24, 25, 26, but early in his career, he's definitely not going to be a good defensive point guard. Perhaps that puts a burden on LaVine to try to improve and be a more attentive defender, but that's what would have me worried next to Morant. And, you know, for all of his skill offensively, I do think, you know, there's a good argument to be made that what the Bulls need is to supercharge the offense as much as they can, play as fast as possible, have this guy who's a great shot creator, both for himself and others, inject the offense with a new bit of life. But, you know, the flip side of it is, like, if you're the Bulls, how much more offense do you need? Do you really want to sell out on an all-offense, no-defense point guard when you've already got guys like Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine, who should be high-usage, primary offensive options? Otto Porter and Wendell Carter are sort of like middle-tier usage, quality offensive players. Both of those guys are good defensively. It's like, what do you want out of that fifth starter, out of that point guard slot? Do you want to take the chance at going for a star? I do think Morant has more star equity than anyone else in this draft besides for Zion Williamson. I'm including RJ Barrett in that, who I'm not a huge fan of. But I also think that his floor is lower. I think that, you know, someone like Jarrett Culver, who would probably be my preferred player for the Bulls to take, we could talk about him a little next week when we do our NCAA tournament preview. But I feel like, you know, Culver's ceiling isn't as high as Morant. I don't think Culver really has a chance to be, you know, a top 15 or 20 overall player, where Morant, he does have a chance to do that, be it, like I said, 10 or 15% chance, whatever you're going to put the odds at. He has that type of ability, but Morant has a much lower floor. I think it's a real roll of the dice. And that's especially the case because of the pairing with LaVine in the backcourt. If the Bulls had more of a 3-and-D type of two guard, I would think Morant would be a great choice. But because they have, you know, a high usage two guard who likes the ball in his hands and who has already shown he can operate at above average efficiency while playing at a really high usage rate in Zach LaVine. I'm not sure if getting sort of a redundant player in that sense works out with Morant, but Morant is a tremendous facilitator and playmaker. And boy, would it be fun to watch the Bulls just turn up the tempo, let Morant go in the open court, have him flinging these one-handed passes to Markkanen in the corner, to Otto Porter off pick and rolls. It could be fun. So you can argue it both ways. And, you know, who knows? The Bulls might not even have a chance at John Morant, because I do think he's going to be either the second or third pick in the draft come June. Second, third.
Yeah, so yeah, when you're talking about like the fit at like point guard next to LaVine, like I know I feel like we talked about last time, like I mentioned like Malcolm Brogdon. I feel like either you want like 3-and-D, like dude who can shoot like 40% low usage and can D up, or you need like bona fide super like superstar point guard. So I guess like you said Morant could possibly be that, and I feel like if he was like superstar offensive caliber player, like maybe the Bulls just have a ridiculously good offense. Maybe Wendell Carter fortifies their defense enough. If they find enough other good defensive players, maybe they could that could make it work. Like, what do you think would you put odds on? What you think like John Morant like turning into a I don't want to say bona fide superstar. Like, I don't want to say like Russell Westbrook level. Like, I know you've mentioned Russ as a comparison, but like what do you think he could be like?
Yeah,
like the odds of him becoming like a bona fide all star score, like 20-25 point per game guy. If he can be like that, I could live with that instead of like just 3-and-D like guy. Like, I feel like if you're gonna get a star point guard there, like sure.
Malcolm Brogdon is really safe and someone without a high ceiling. Yeah. Morant is not a safe pick, but he's got a super high ceiling. I mean, this is a hyper explosive athlete, super fast, loves playing in the open court, and the dude's also really competitive. Like, him and LaVine would probably jive together, I would think. Maybe they'd butt heads initially, but I think that his attitude would resonate with LaVine. We know LaVine is a really competitive guy, and I think, you know, with a lot of the comments LaVine has made throughout this year about how the Bulls were playing initially under Jim Boylan when he was critical of that, and then how he's kind of built up guys like Wendell Carter throughout the season with his quotes in the postgame locker room, I think that him and Morant would jive in that sense. Morant has a really flashy game for sure, but there's also some substance. It's not just style. To me, it's like his athleticism and his playmaking ability is really what gives him a chance to be a star. I said 10 or 15% chance to be like, you know, a superstar. Now, to be an all-star, he has a better chance than that. I mean, he might have, you know, just based on being the second pick, maybe he's got a 40 or 50% chance of being an all-star. Yeah. But you have to think like, how do the pieces complement each other? So like, would it even be possible for the right. Bulls to build a good defense if Zach LaVine, John Morant, and Lauri Markkanen are all on the floor together for 35 minutes a game, even with Wendell Carter and Otto Porter, who are two of the better defenders at their position, potentially projecting them forward? I just don't know if the Bulls could still build a top 10 defense, let alone a top 5 defense with those guys in place. However, that's a ton of offensive firepower. You compare it to the Suns, it's like, you know, no one who is a big NBA Twitter nerd seems to be too high on the Suns. I think a lot of that is because their two best players, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, don't play a ton of defense. We'll see if that continues to be the trend moving forward. Ayton has been better defensively as of late in his rookie year. But you just don't want so many guys who are minuses on one side of the ball on the court. Now, it might be worth a roll of the dice because Morant does have that type of offensive upside. This guy is a freak athlete. And when you just consider his general story, I mean, he was a two-star recruit. His only high major offer came from South Carolina really late in the game. Otherwise, he had only mid-major offers. He didn't have a recruiting page on ESPN or 24/7 Sports or Rivals. He was totally off the radar, but he got a late invite to a camp being put on by Chandler Parsons' AAU team, and the Murray State assistant coach found him in like a side gym. His name wasn't even on the roster packet that you get when you go to events like that. I've been to him before. So this is a guy who is totally off the radar, who might be the second freaking pick in the NBA draft. Great story. Seems like he comes from a great family. His dad has been giving a ton of media interviews. His name is T. Morant. He helped train him, making him do box jumps, tire jumps. He had a quarter court in his backyard in South Carolina. He comes from the small town in South Carolina with 2,000 people in it. Mike Schmitz of ESPN wrote a great feature on him. Jeremy Wu of SI wrote a great feature on him. Miren Fader of Bleacher Report went there and wrote a great feature on him. So there's a ton of information about Ja Morant and his personality out there if you want to get a better look. The basic scouting report is that this guy is a freak athlete. He's an amazing passer. He'll dunk it on your fucking head. He's not a polished outside shooter. He's super skinny. And defensively, he has a ton of work to do. So, you know.
So another quick question. So if they did end up with Morant, I would assuming you don't think he'd – like, what do you think of him being, like, immediate impact? It sounds like he probably needs some time, like – it seems like if this would be a situation where if they drafted him, they would definitely want to go sign like a veteran to start next season.
And now, I don't know who that guy would be. I don't know if you're still in the mix for someone like Darren Collison, who right now is a starter on what, the 3 seed, which is how the Pacers are playing right now in the Eastern Conference. So like, I don't know like the quality of a point guard you're going to be committing to at that point, because then, you know, if you're throwing Morant out there too, I mean, if he's playing a ton of minutes, your playoff aspirations are probably taking a pretty big hit just because he's so young. I think that he could still be productive and show flashes. But yeah, you definitely want to sign another point guard. I don't have a list of veteran point guards in front of me. I would be scared the Bulls would want D Rose to mentor him. I would not personally want the Bulls to sign D Rose. We don't need to get into the pros and cons of that signing on this podcast right now. But there's a ton of like veteran free agents that will be available.
I mean, we've talked about like Collison, Rubio, yeah, Patrick Beverly. Like, if you want to go, yeah, because like, I know there's some like the younger big names that are like, we've talked about Brogdon, like D'Angelo Russell's going to be a restricted free agent. I'm assuming, I mean, that's like bigger, like gambles. Like, but I feel like the Nets are probably going to keep him. So you're looking at base. I feel like Collison, Rubio, and Patrick Beverly are the guys that have been most brought up that would make sense on like a short term deal. Like, I don't think anyone's committing big money or like long term money to those guys. Like, the Pacers bring back Collison. I know they got a lot of guys to resign, so I'm not really sure how that's going to work out. But I feel like those three names are the most popular that I can remember. Like, I haven't looked at those that closely. I feel like I've kind of talked myself out of Rubio just because I don't like the shooting. I feel like it would kind of just be Chris Dunn all over again, except older, and he might even be worse at this point. So like, I feel like Collison would be a decent option. And I feel like Beverly would be as just a 3-and-D 3-point shooter. He'd bring a lot of toughness and grit and Chicago tough kind of stuff. So I feel like that could be.
How about even Archie Diacono getting some starting minutes? Yeah. Now, I wouldn't love that, especially if they're trying to compete for a playoff spot next year. But Archie Diacono is 3rd in the NBA in assist to turnover ratio.
He's been really good. Like, for what he is, like, he's been you can't really ask for anything else.
I saw someone on Twitter saying that a team might try to steal him from the Bulls on something like a 3-year, $15 million deal. Who knows if the Bulls would pay him, but at that point, if they were going to pay him, I think he'd be seeing major minutes. Whereas if they draft Morant and then sign a veteran, then Archie Diacono is your 3rd string point guard. I would like Pat Beverly. I think that would be a good name for the Bulls. I mean, Goran Dragic has a player option too. Maybe he opts out of that and you can get him without totally overpaying him. I know he's a bigger name. You know, Jeremy Lin is another guy.
Corey Joseph, from the Pacers, Corey Joseph. So both Collison and Joseph will be free agents.
Sure.
Another possibility there. I mean, I'd take either of those guys if you're just looking for short term, like, seems fine to me. I guess moving on from that then, I know we're going to talk about more draft prospects next week, go in depth some of those guys. If they didn't get Morant as a point guard, are there any other point guards who you think would make sense in the draft, even if, whether it's whatever, 4 or 5, or maybe even later in the draft with the 2nd round pick? Like, are there any other point guards in this draft who
you
think would be
a good point guard who's going to be taken in the lottery? And point guard is weak this year. It's not like it was 2 years ago when you had Fultz and Lonzo and Dennis Smith and De'Aaron Fox and Ntilikina, man, not a lot of those guys have panned out so far. But, you know, this draft is mostly heavy on wings. The one other point guard who's going to go in the top 10, it appears like right now, is Darius Garland, who only played 4 games this season for Vanderbilt before tearing his meniscus, shutting it down for the season. He's a small guard. He's only 6'2 or 6'3, again, very skinny. He's someone, though, his game is predicated on off-the-dribble shooting. So if you want someone who's going to pull up, rip threes, instill ideally be a high IQ point guard. That isn't totally proven yet. But, you know, that's the ideal version of Darius Garland. He hit 47% of his threes this year in those four games on 4.6 attempts per game. But what troubled me is that he averaged more turnovers than assists. He only averaged 2.6 assists and 3.0 turnovers. Now, I saw him play at the AAU level. I saw him play. He was out of Florida, I believe, without looking it up. No, he's out of Tennessee. I'm sorry. But I think he played for the Florida Nike team on the EYBL. And I saw him play on that circuit and thought that he was the best point guard in that class. Like I said, not a great point guard class, but it also included Trey Jones, who is on Duke, who is another guy who could go in the first round. I mean, Kansas is starting a freshman point guard this year named Devin Dotson. So there are some decent freshman point guards around the country. I thought that Garland was the best of those guys entering college. I am a little bit surprised his stock has been in the top 10, given the fact that, you know, he sort of has a reputation as this heady point guard, but he hasn't really proven it as a facilitator. I mean, granted, he only played four games. He's also just really small, so I wonder about his ability to finish over length inside. I wonder about his ability to defend. We talk about Morant likely not being a good defender. Morant at least stockpiles blocks. Morant has been blocking shots like crazy in the OVC lately down the stretch. If you look at his last few games, two blocks and he had zero, but then he had 2-1-3-1-1-2-1. So Morant gets a ton of blocks, also gets some steals. You look at his steals, just working up by his most recent game and back, 1-1-2-1-0-1-0-1-2-1-1-4-1-3-3-3-1-2. So yeah, Morant gets a lot of steals. Obviously, he's playing low competition. But I feel like Garland's not going to be good defensively either. Garland, like you, like there's going to be a urge by some people to like compare him to Chris Paul because he's small and has off the dribble shooting. But like Chris Paul's a monster defensively. I just don't see Garland really being that type of guy. Yeah. If you want to talk about a good defensive point guard, there's Trey Jones, but what I want out of a point guard is someone with the versatility to defend either backcourt spot. Trey Jones is too small, too. He's going to be a one-position defender. The guy I like, who Bulls can maybe get with their second-round pick, which right now would be the number 37, is Ty Jerome, who is Virginia's second-best player. Ty Jerome's a junior 6'5 guard. I think he's got more scoring ability than Archie Diacono and more defensive potential because he's bigger, he's stronger, he's a little bit faster. He's a really good player. I like Ty Jerome a lot, and I'd even take him with a late first round pick. Kobe White would be another guy. Yeah, Kobe White is a score first guy. He's a combo guard who's been playing point guard for North Carolina this year. 6'5". He has flashed some pretty impressive vision. He just burned Duke. He dropped 21 on Duke in the last game of the regular season for UNC. UNC won that game. They swept Duke in the season series without Zion. He's had some huge games lately for him. Like you said, he's had some huge games lately. He's got the step back jumper, which is huge in today's NBA. Kobe White will splash that on your face. He's got pretty deep shooting range. To me, he's more of like a Lou Williams combo guard type guy, rather than like someone who is going to like run the offense. Like I want a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander type next to LaVine, someone who has high upside, but is mostly going to be a big, long, versatile defender, who can put pressure on the defense, get to the foul line, just attract defensive attention, but still make the right play, make the high IQ play. I would try to trade the pick for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander if the Bulls could, but yeah, if that's not realistic, you know, Morant would be a roll of the dice, but he's got high upside, man, so it could be fun.
Yeah, it sounds fun. Like I said, we'll definitely talk about prospects more in next week's pod because that will be leading up to the NCAA tournament. To finish out here, let's talk about this article. Darnell Mayberry did an interview with our guy Jimmy. Jimmy Buckets Boylan, right? Is that what your nickname for him was? Jimmy Buckets Boylan. Yeah, Darnell Mayberry did a sit down interview with Jimmy Buckets Boylan, two parter. We got part one of it dropped today over at The Athletic, and it was kind of just Jimbo Bates just kind of dishing on his philosophies. Obviously, we've been very critical of Jim Boylan on this podcast. You thought he should have been fired like 3 weeks, like basically right away after the mutiny happened. He shouldn't coach another game. And this just kind of gave him the chance to kind of talk about what he's all about, what he believes in, his philosophies. Was there anything that stood out from this interview that really caught your eye about what he believes
and
what
he Boylan really thinks is important as a coach? Well, in this interview, it was a really nice job by Darnell, who's been great on the beat all season for The Athletic, to get some time sitting down with him. One thing I thought was really funny, the first picture in the story is Boylan at a whiteboard with the word math written out in all caps and underlined. So I thought that was hilarious. But he was talking about basically how the math of the game changed. He said the game has changed more in the last 5 years than the previous 30 years before that, because of the infatuation with the three-point shot, because of how teams have to defend now while other teams play for, like, you know, the Morey ball layups, threes, and free throws type of strategy. I thought Boylan came out really well in this interview. Obviously, a lot of what Boylan says in the press in general is total nonsense. I wanted to bring this up, too, while we're talking about Boylan. When Wayne Seldon Jr. got thrown out of the Lakers game on Tuesday, Boylan had a quote. "I just told him we're not going to do that here," Boylan said. "He's not going to get technicals here. I'll get the technicals." And he was great about that. So just classic meatball Boylan being like, "I'm the only one who has the authority to get the technicals." But back to this interview with Darnell in The Athletic, I thought Boylan sounded like a really smart basketball mind. I mean, he was talking about the need to play out of flow pick and roll offensively. He was talking about how to defend a slipping screener, which is when you hear him yell "square" over the broadcast, that's what he's referring to, guarding against the slipping screener, not thinking that the guy is actually going to come set a screen when you know he's just going to slip it. So it's a really good read, I thought, for Bulls fans. If you're a member of The Athletic, it's definitely worth it subscribing over there. Stefan Noe does great work. Darnell's been awesome too, and he did some fantastic work on this interview.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just like some of the stuff like he talked about, that you mentioned the math and like his just philosophies here. I'll read some of the stuff here. And he also talked about his defense philosophies, like in terms of guarding 3-point shooters, and like and he clearly is very, he believes what he believes. Like he's very, I don't want to say stubborn, but he's obviously made some adjustments. Like he did talk about again the stuff with about how like when he started when he took over as coach, the crawl before you can walk whole thing. I still really just can't buy that just because of how bad they were. But he did talk about that again here. One of the big things that we criticized was the offense and like that the slow pace, they weren't shooting many threes and the post and all the post ups and all that kind of stuff. And that was something we were critical of. So Darnell asked him, "How do you like to play offensively?" And his response was, "I like to play smart, run when it's appropriate and when we have numbers. I like to throw the ball ahead. I like my wings to run. I don't like a lot of dribbles in transition. I like to throw it in and have guys attack." You mentioned the flow pick and roll thing. And then he talked about multiple ball handlers, which obviously makes sense. Having multiple guys out there that can attack off the dribble, that can push in transition. We've kind of seen more of that lately. We've seen Lowry push in transition. We see the guards push in transition. I think that's really, really good to have a versatile attack. I feel like all that stuff kind of makes sense. And he talked about stuff. He talked about getting rid of long twos. Because I feel like when he did take over, they were taking shots late in the clock. They were taking more long twos. And I feel like those have gone away a bit more lately. I haven't looked at the exact numbers. I'd have to dig into that a little more to see the splits of and how like their shot profile has been looking lately. But I feel like it's definitely been a bit better. I feel like they're still not taking a lot of threes. And Darnell mentioned that in here as well. While they've been trending upward, it's still like relative like to the rest of the league. They haven't been taking that many. But I feel like they've been taking more, and he talked a bit about that, how he wants them to take smart shots, wants them to take open shots, but he's not, his philosophy isn't just like jack threes. He's fine taking some contested threes. He said, "I don't mind a contested three from the corner, but he wants them to take open shots, and he wants them to take quality shots," which all makes sense. And like I said, he says, "We've limited our mid-range twos. I've coached them not to settle for mid-range twos." So like, I feel like a lot of the stuff he says in here does make sense, like what the kind of the stuff we've been asking for in terms of those flow pick and rolls, in terms of shooting a bit more threes. I guess we'll see how it gets put into practice if he's for the rest of the season. Like the offense has fallen back a bit, but part of that has to do with Lowry really struggling. I feel like If he stays around next year, we'll see how they play next year and what kind of pace they play with. I mean, he clearly isn't like I don't think he's as much hoy ball pace and space 3-point as him, but I feel like he does have some of those philosophies. I feel like I kind of agree with you. Like I didn't see anything in here that was like really just like goofy, because I think Darnell even mentioned at the beginning of the interview as well that he like a lot of his post game press conferences are like he uses cliches and buzzwords, and it's kind of annoying. I think even from what I remember, I think Boylan even mentioned that he's kind of self aware about some of the nonsense that he talks about in his post game press conferences. So as you mentioned, like I feel like he's clearly a really smart guy in terms of he knows way more basketball than we do. I still have some questions about him in terms of his in-game strategies, his timeout management, his substitution patterns, kind of stuff like that. The post game, the quotes can be just goofy as hell, classic meatball kind of stuff. So like, I mean, I feel like right now, like Boylan kind of feels like a guy who like an A to B coach where like he might be a decent guy for this young team, like teaching them fundamentals, helping them grow a little bit. But I don't know if he's like the long-term answer. Like it seems like when he was at Utah, like they got sick of him after a while. Like I feel like there's a reason he was probably an assistant coach for so long. Like he feels like a really good, smart mind to have on the coaching staff. But in terms of like the long-term like face of your franchise coach, like I can't really say I'm sold on that. I'm assuming you would agree considering you've
Like Boylan more after reading this interview. So if you have Athletic subscription, go read this because Darnell did a great job with it. And I thought that Boylan really proved that he knew what he was talking about. And, you know, it's easy for people like me and you to sit back here like this dude has forgotten more basketball than we'll ever know in our entire life, you know. It was interesting to learn something about his background, too. He was saying that he was an offensive assistant at different points in his career under Eric Musselman, former Kings coach, who is now the coach of Nevada, a team with Final Four aspirations and March Madness. It was cool just to, you know, learn a little bit about Boylan and how he sees the game. The dude definitely knows his stuff. I did think it was kind of funny at one point when he was like, you know, what I wanted to do at the beginning is get the ball in the paint a little bit more. That was a criticism. He said, he's like, that was a criticism with the last coach who was here, that the ball never entered the paint. I was like, what the hell? I mean, maybe Gar and Pax were telling them that, but like, I never heard that on Twitter from anyone, you know, reputable. Criticizing the Bulls for not getting the ball into the paint, unless I'm just forgetting it under Hoiberg. But good interview in general. And yeah, I mean, Boylan's going to be around. Yeah, so whatever. I mean, that wraps it up for me.
Yeah. Just, I guess, the last point on this, like I did kind of like at the end here when he was talking about, and this, this was kind of meatball stuff at the end. We were talking about tough guys. He said tough like 8 times in one paragraph, talking about his coaching staff and like Pete Myers is a tough guy. Lancer, I'm not sure how to say his name, like Sean Rusper, tough guys, John Paxson, tough guys. But then he ended it with talking about leadership, and I did kind of like how he talked about just like his taking accountability of his leadership and how he's willing to take criticism. He said, I'll take all the criticism, I'll take all the negativity that he's felt. Like he's sticking with his guns. Like he obviously knows that he's been criticized a lot, and I did kind of like how he's willing to take the accountability on that. Like I definitely agree with you that he comes off pretty well in this interview, and we'll see what part two is about. I would assume that'll be coming probably sometime in the next 2 days. I'm curious to see.
Man, we just talked about the Bulls for an hour.
Yeah, that was an hour. They got in their ass beat basically the last 3 games. We found a play to talk about, but I got nothing else. I guess we can do a quick look ahead at the schedule here, upcoming schedule. Before we totally wrap up here, they do go on I believe it's a 3-game road trip coming up. They start on Friday in Los Angeles. They play the Clippers. The Clippers have been hell of a story. They traded Tobias Harris, and they've only like gotten better, which is crazy. They traded their best player at the deadline. They've only gotten better. They look like they're going to be a playoff team. They've got a really good culture there. I mentioned Patrick Beverley. You mentioned Lou Williams. Lou Williams has been playing out of his mind. He just became the all-time leader in bench points in NBA history. Like he's probably gonna win Sixth Man of the Year again, so good for Lou Williams. But so they play at the Clippers on Saturday, and I believe they go to the Sacramento Kings next. I think that's Sunday. So Friday at Clippers, 9:30 p.m. Chicago time, and then Sunday we got a late afternoon / evening game in Sacramento. I think the Bulls always struggle in Sacramento. I can't remember what they've done the last year or two, but I feel like it's been a house of horrors for them in general. The Kings have been a fun team this year. I feel like that should be a fun game, depending on who's playing. The Kings have kind of fallen out of the playoff race, but I think they're still They're still going to fight to the end, obviously, and they have a fun young team worth watching. And then they end the road trip at Phoenix, and Phoenix has not been completely shitty. They've kind of found their groove a little bit. They've just beat the Warriors. They beat the Bucks for a second time. So that could be a fun game as well, with Booker playing better, with DeAndre Ayton playing better. They also have Mikal Bridges. So this is going to be a pretty tough road trip for the Bulls, and it'll be a good test to see if they can kind of bounce back from this tough little stretch. Are any of those
looking forward to any of those games?
You plan on watching
now.
Any of these or what? That's true. It's tournament mode. So Sundays, that's going to be the Bulls Kings is going to be during selection
Sunday.
Yeah,
I'm straight in NCAA tournament mode.
Right
now,
at the same
just to
time.
Peel back what I did today. I wrote 5 stories today, basically on the case for each of 5 of the best teams in the country of them winning the national title. So I was churning out the content all day. I'll be doing that through March Madness. I'm going to the Final Four, actually.
Nice.
In Minnesota. I'm covering it the 4th time in the last 5 years. So that's a big thrill for me. I'm excited and grateful that SB Nation is sending me to Minnesota for that. Do I wish it was somewhere warmer? Yes. But at least it's pretty close. So that'll be fun. And, you know, hopefully we'll get a Zion Williamson versus Ja Morant matchup in the Final Four for me to scout.
Well, that'd be sweet. Well, like I said, have fun with all the draft prep, tournament draft prep, all that stuff. I'm definitely excited for the tournament. I always tell myself that I'm going to watch more college basketball just to like get a better feel for some of these draft prospects, and then I never do. I end up watching shitty Illinois, and like that's basically it. So that'll be fun to watch the tournament. Really excited to look forward to it and get a better feel for some of these guys and really get into draft stuff. Like I said, next week when we fit our next Cash Considerations pod in, we will be very tournament draft heavy, because at this point, like I said, there's really not that much to talk about. The Bulls, we've kind of hammered everything home with them at this point. So we're going to hopefully go draft tournament heavy next week. Should be a lot of fun. But besides that, I think that's basically all we got. Just want to, as always, give a shout out to Blue Wire Pods for hosting us. We have a new podcast I want to shout out. Andy Bailey and Dan, I believe it's Favale, a couple of good guys. I know they're good on the NBA Twitter sphere. I've worked with Andy when I was with FanRag Sports. He's a smart dude. He's a lawyer. Dan Favale, I believe, is with Bleacher Report. They got a new pod called Hardwood Knox that Blue Wire just added. So check those guys out as well. Like I said, check out all the other pods around the Blue Wire Podcast Network. We got a ton of good ones. So besides us, check out all that other stuff. And that's all for us today.
Later.
From Jason, Ricky, this was Cash Considerations.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.